The views expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. Listener discretion is advised.
How eerie, you know? Yeah,
eerie, always eerie, but it'll be interesting to hear.
And she's great.
And her mother went to school with Anne Frank, so it'll be really interesting.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be a great, great interview and great show. Stay with us.
And there you go.
Hey, and there you go. I'm back on the air. And I think I lost Bob there for a second. Hey, Bob, did I lose you?
Yes, I didn't know whether I was supposed to be on or not.
I'll carry on here. I'm going to try and get in touch with our guest.
Yeah,
go ahead.
He goes, he emailed, he says, we're calling, I said, we're calling in 5 minutes. He goes, what's going on? I need some help. Help?
Yeah,
but,
I'm
need to call him.
Yeah, I'm trying right now.
Okay.
You carry on, Bob, and maybe you can talk a little bit about our guest.
Okay, I'm...
In anticipation of getting him.
Right, so I am typing, just a second here, I am typing to him, we're calling you, this is on our chat line, we're calling you now, and who is this person we're calling? He is Robert Carr, and he was born in 1928, and he had a very interesting life. By the time he was 20, 22, he was a medium in Portland, Oregon. And then he ended up in Seattle in the mid-50s, and that led to him being courted by Captain Al Hubbard, the Tim Leary of the 60s. Captain Al Hubbard was the only person in North America who had access to Sandoz LSD, and the CIA had to get their LSD for their MKUltra experiments and probes and dastardly deeds from Captain Al Hubbard. Well, Captain Al Hubbard took an interest in the spiritual, prototypical New Age retreat center that Robert Carr was running in Seattle with Dave Worster and others. And for 3 years, this group had 75 people, had 1,500 Sandoz LSD trips, and they were studied by Captain Al Hubbard because these people were so-called healthy. They were intelligent, sophisticated people. They weren't alcoholics, schizophrenics, or whatever. And Captain Al Hubbard was very interested in what LSD did to people of this kind of, quote, healthy mind. They did that for 3 years. Then Bob Carr went to San Francisco. Robert Carr, Bob Carr, anyways. He went to San Francisco, and he got involved with the printing business. And then he met Wes Wilson, who started working at Bob Carr's printing company, and Wes Wilson made the first psychedelic poster. And that psychedelic poster was a result of LSD that Robert Carr had given him in a private party in San Francisco, say around 1963, 64. Wes Wilson was so amazed at the LSD experience that he made a psychedelic drawing for his birthday party or wedding invitation. I can't remember. And that was so attractive that he started making posters beyond the wedding invitation. And eventually he became the main poster maker for Bill Graham at the famous Fillmore West Auditorium. The point is that Bob Carr was involved with the San Francisco LSD scene after being involved with the underground scene in Seattle. He then went on to create one of the best light shows for concerts on the West Coast, and he eventually performed that on television up in Seattle, and they won a Grammy for that. He then created the first MTV-style video for a TV channel that was operating in San Francisco. He then got involved with the spiritual philosopher Jiddu Krishnamurti that led to the anti-Jiddu Krishnamurti named UG Krishnamurti. You can Google UG Krishnamurti, very interesting counter-environment to Jiddu Krishnamurti. And then Bob Carr wrote a book in 2000 because the people in Bollywood that Bob was a friend of through his association with UG Krishnamurti, they thought his life was very interesting and his spiritual odyssey and his admitting that he never found any enlightenment or anything, and he debunks all the gurus now. He wrote his autobiography in 2003, and that's available. It's called God Men Con Men. But he's been in Mumbai, where he wrote this book in the early part of this decade, and he's still there. And he's
with us on the line right now.
Okay.
Hello, Bob Carr. Bob? Oh, hold on. I have to punch him in. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Bob, hello. Bob Carr. Is he there? Oh, come on. This can't be. What happened?
You had him there, right?
I had him. I was speaking with him. What, does he put himself on hold or something?
No, that's... what does that sound mean?
I don't know. I don't know what it means.
Okay, I'll say, we're disconnected. I'll tell him.
Hold on, is he saying anything here? What the heck is that?
Maybe that is his communication. Or disconnected. Okay, I'm...
What, should I just disconnect now and try and get him back?
Disconnect and call back.
All right, here we go. I'm going to try it again, Bob. Here, I'm going to stay on the phone when you...
My biography of him going out over the air?
Yeah, of course.
So he's been in Mumbai for 7 or 8 years, and he told me, I've been interviewing him about his book this summer, and he was describing through the summer the anarchy in Mumbai. 18 million people.
I hate anarchy. I hate anarchy. Do you hear that? I hate anarchy. You know what? I had I went to something last Sunday, and someone described it as anarchy, and it was horrible. It was just a horrible experience. Hello, Bob?
I think it was for most people.
Hi, Bob. Okay, I got Bob. I got Bob back on the line here. Let's see whether this works. Okay, Bob, are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there he is. There he is, loud and clear. All right.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what happened before. Okay, that's our word for the day, okay. So, Bob Carr, did you hear Bob's intro of you at all?
No.
You didn't? What happened did it just go dead when
you said, I put you on hold, and then in a minute it went dead.
Oh, well.
Yeah, there's a problem there, Greg, because you put me on hold and I went dead, 10 minutes ago.
That's interesting. Well, Robert, you're in Mumbai.
Right.
It's still going on, is it? It's still happening. You're quite near the hotel, are you? The Taj Hotel? It's amazing. There's still the gunfire going on. I can hear it over the phone. Yeah, there's the machine guns and the explosions. Oh, it must have been terrible for you. How did that impact you, Robert, there in Mumbai?
Well, I live in the north part of Mumbai in the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
and I used to live in Colaba, where the Taj Hotel is.
Mm-hmm.
But some friends came over and we had dinner, and I went to bed earlier that night. I didn't even turn on the television. In the morning, I had a phone call from a friend in Thailand. He said, "Do you know what's going on in Mumbai?" I said, "No." He said, "There's a war. They're after the Brits and Americans." So immediately I turned the television on and I saw what was unfolding. And for 3 days it went on.
Oh, it did. It went on and on and on.
Yeah. Although this afternoon they said everything was mopped up and the fires were all out.
Can I make a very embarrassing admission to you?
Yes, sure.
I'm going to make an extremely embarrassing admission. I've heard of Mumbai. And it was almost like, to me, it was a brand new city that had been sprung out of nowhere. I'd never heard of Mumbai before. And then somebody said that it's Bombay. And I went, whoa, wait a minute. I had no idea of that. It was like not knowing that Beijing was once Peking. I had no idea. And my father was stationed there during the latter portion of World War II and for a few years after until they kicked the British soldiers out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yeah, Mumbai is it was a political, move. The world knows the city as Bombay, and old-time residents still call it Bombay. But the politicians changed the railroad station name. Chennai was Madras. And they wanted to even change Bangalore, but somehow they people fought it and stopped them from doing it. No, but I'd say 50% of the people refer to Bombay as Bombay. So,
how long have you been living in India?
I've been here 5 or 6 years now.
Do you recommend it? Do you recommend it?
Well, for what?
I don't know, for living.
Well, I've been an Indiaphile for a good many years, 40 years. I came here in 1966, stayed here a year, came back in 79, and stayed for another 6 or 7 months. And then I started coming regularly and developing lots of friends here. And I decided when I was in California, I lived in San Francisco, I was retired, finished with the work that I was doing. I said, I think I'll come to Bombay and see live here and see how it goes. So I stayed with some friends who have a flat right near the Taj. So it's within walking distance of 15 minutes away. So I stayed there off and on for 3 years, something like that. I'd make trips back to the U.S. and coming and going. Then I finally decided that I'll get my own flat. So I moved to a place called Andheri, which I had stayed in Andheri before when I was writing a book I wrote 4 years ago, God Men, Con Men. So India is like a second home for me, and I must say I have more Indian friends than I have American or Canadian friends.
It's hard to have Canadian and American friends, I've found. Very difficult.
I have two or three people now that I call friends in San Rafael, California.
Can I
San Francisco?
You remind me something, Bob, that I really do have to say, and I think this is a good time to say it. I know it's sort of off topic, but last week I went to a meeting of the station, and I just want to say thank you to some people who showed an interest to come out. Participate in the station's ongoing activities, and they really made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're talking about friends and the difficulty of finding friends, I think that I had some friends that are friends of the program. Some of them I'd never met before, and we had Tom. We had two people named Tom. It's a special. We have many listeners named Tom, actually, but two of them showed up. We had Paul and Roma and Mary. And I just want to thank all of them for coming out and backing up the station and our ongoing activities. And so thank you to all of you for doing that. I really do consider you my friends, and at least, you know, I hope you it's likewise. And
yeah,
anyway, I just wanted to say that.
That's quite a confession from someone who's so unpopular at CKLN.
That's right. Exactly. It's nice. It was nice to be in a room with at least a few people. Ken, of course. How could I forget Ken? Ken Taylor, who often phones in. Tom DeCastro, of course. The other people I'll just mention by their first names. I don't know whether they want their names mentioned, but Tom and Paul.
That's great,
Roma.
Greg, but
yeah.
we have a caller on from India.
I know, I understand. It just I got sentimental there for a moment, and I hope, Bob, I just, Mr. Carr, I hope you don't mind that I did. When you were talking about friends and things like that, I just thought it was, I had to say it this week. It was important, and I hadn't said it earlier. Bob, you see, Mr. Carr, it's because we've got two Bobs on the phone now, Bob from Hawaii and Bob from Mumbai, India. You see, this morning, Bob, I had to, Bob 2, Bob 1 and Bob 2. Bob 2 in Mumbai, I had to leave. I came in to do the show, and then I realized that I for some technical problem, I didn't have some of the material that I needed to do the program. For instance, I didn't have these explosions and things and you know, all these rifle shots. In fact, I don't even have as many as I really had. I had a whole cornucopia of these sounds all available, and I had to go back to the station. I'm sorry, back to my home. I had to go back to my home. I had to get on my bike, ride back to my home, get the stuff, while Bob stayed on the air and regaled the audience with tales of conspiracy and other, and of news and the alternative, what, top-down effect or the bottom-up? What were you doing, Bob?
I did both. I did bottom-up virtual economy, and then I did the top-down conspiracy of the Mumbai attack.
Right. So,
Robert, what did he stay in the home for 3-4 days?
Yeah, I've been home. Well, I went out after the second day. I ventured out. The taxis weren't going to South Bombay. I have a friend living there. She said that she couldn't get a taxi to take her into South Bombay. They were all freaked out. There were no buses. The streets were empty, she said. She was staying in a place called Dadar, which is about 20 or 30 minutes away by train.
So for some people, it was a nice little break. But for others, it was a very extreme event, right? It was, extreme. I mean, people lost their lives and so on. But for others, it sort of calmed things down in the area that they were in.
Well, I don't know. This happened several years ago when there was a train blast in Mumbai.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And there were, again, over 200 people were killed and 300 or 400 people injured. And the case is still going to trial. The police haven't solved it completely. There's a great deal of secrecy here in India. The police just are mum. They just don't say anything. So for several days, we didn't know anything. I was watching CNN and watching the sister CNN channel and a couple of Indian channels. And you really didn't know what was happening, just that there were terrorists there. How many, they weren't sure. How many, they knew that people were killed, but they weren't saying how many.
Yeah, there was a startling lack of information, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And the CNN, I guess you were getting CNN International and
right,
CNN.
Right.
See, we don't get that CNN International, but the reason that we did get it at this time was because it was Thanksgiving.
Scary.
It was Thanksgiving. Yeah. So the regular people like Wolf Blitzer and all these other people were gone. So they had to fill in with material, and they filled in from this whole station that's going on all the time, I guess, CNN International, which seems to me is news for adults. The CNN regular U.S. one is news for children. But the CNN International, they seem to get a little more in depth and have a bit bigger. They use the larger words and so on. They don't do hip hop news like to, listen to this. Listen to this is TJ. I played this a little bit early, but I think it's worth playing again. Here's the kind of stuff you'd hear on the regular CNN. This is TJ Holmes talking about the Pirates of the Sirius Star.
You've been hearing a lot about pirates, and we're not talking about Johnny Depp type characters. We're talking about the nasty guys off the coast of Africa.
The nasty guys off the coast of Africa. We're not talking about Johnny Depp. I got to put it in sort of popular culture terms for you. We're not talking about Johnny Depp. We're not talking about going to see a movie about pirates. We're talking about real pirates. Okay, we're talking about we're talking about Long John Silver type stuff.
Of Africa, okay. Over in Somalia now, been holding the latest right now we know of is a Saudi owned tanker. $100 million worth of oil on this thing.
$100 million worth on this thing.
On this thing.
that's the regular CNN, and they have different types of people catering to different levels of infancy on that station.
This is the Eubonics audience.
Right, for a little while they do that, and then they have the, Rick Sanchez! Hey, let's go on my Twitter. Let's go on my Twitter. I got some, let's do a little bit of technology here. I'm Rick Sanchez! And then you have, I'm Wolf Blitzer, talking like a computer. Thanks, Carol. And who else? But my favorite, of course, is Betty Nin. I can't criticize her at all. She's the best, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, Robert, Bob, too.
Yeah.
He knows all these people because through the television landscape, he's in the same sphere and knows who you're referring to, even though he's a million miles away.
That's right. Yeah, it's all we're all together. We're all together on this, aren't we? Well, I think, except the explosions aren't going off here, although they may as well be, because they could have been down as far. Really, Bob, as far as you're concerned, it could have been down my street or down your street. We're all it's like it could have happened in any place because of the proximity we have. But then again, from these reports in India, we got the feeling like we didn't really know what was happening at any given time. For instance, there'd be. You'd hear a report saying that an Indian policeman or chief of police would come out and say, "We have the situation completely under control at the moment. Everything is okay, and okay, I better get back to my work. I'll be back in a moment, okay? Okay, I'll be back. Okay, I'll give a better report a bit later. You know, day two. Yes, I think everything is going along okay. We have everything under control, and oh no, I better go back again. Obviously, there are more terrorists in the hotel, so I will go back now. And day three. All right, I think we have everything completely done now. I think you can all go home. We're just going to be mopping up the situation. We will be giving... Oh, no, not again. No, come on. All right, I'll be back. Day four, they got it. So that
anyway,
was...
Anyway, yeah, it's been a form of entertainment for people here. They wouldn't want to call it entertainment.
No.
But it passes the time. They're lots of youths were down, crowded around the Taj Hotel. It's a place called the Gateway of India, and it's a large public area, a promenade. People hang out there and cruise around, and they were drinking and getting drunk and watching and hoping to see some heavy drama.
Well, one of the things that went on that I think was the strangest part of all of this, and maybe the most important, and perhaps the Taj was the distraction, if we want to call it that. If Bob was saying that the whole Mumbai incident was a distraction about the to counter the Sirius Star oil tanker piracy, but we had this building there, which we came to learn more about, if one cared to go and do some looking into it, and I have, and it's the Shabbat Lubavitch building, the Shabbat house in Mumbai, and it's and the Shabbat Lubavitch is one of the largest Hasidic movements in Orthodox Judaism, and it's based in the Crown Heights neighborhood of Brooklyn.
Mm. Yeah, that's a place in Colaba. There is called Nariman Point Center there. It's a building there where there's this Jewish community. India has all the religions of the world here, and Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims.
Well, certainly that could be said for many places that there are Jewish communities. But this Shabbat Lubavitch has 300 settlements or 300 buildings or congregations all over the world. In fact, I found a speech by Joe Lieberman. You remember him, Joe Mentum?
Mm. Yeah.
Mr. Joe Mentum.
How can I forget?
Yeah. And he says, this is a speech he made March 16th, 2008, quoting Joe Lieberman.
And we live at a time when the state of Israel is reborn. It's quite a remarkable and fortunate time to be alive. Both of these countries are founded on principles, by a set of ideals, of the work of every human being, of the right of every human being to try to develop themselves to the maximum. We say in our Declaration of Independence that we are all endowed with these rights from our Creator. In the case of Israel, these rites are described even earlier in the Torah. Shabbat Lubavitch is an extraordinary movement. It was my honor to spend some occasions with the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson of righteous memory. He was a powering figure, obviously a great sage in our time. He was learned deeply in Jewish subjects, but he was very learned in the subjects of the world. And then Joe Lieberman goes on to say, I've often said, and I do not mean this as a political statement, that sometimes I think Shabbat has a larger worldwide organization than the CIA. They turn up everywhere.
Yeah. Interesting, now, Tom Hennigan,
I've never heard of this place before. It's in the old part of Mumbai here, which is all Victorian buildings, and right, it's maybe 20 minutes from the Taj Hotel.
Well, they're all over the world.
It was built over 100 years ago.
This is a very extreme Jewish supremacist sect, and they have all. I mean, this is a fairly big building they were in. Maybe they didn't occupy that whole building, but
there's three or four stories there.
Yeah,
and he says the rabbi and his wife were killed there.
Yes, there were about six or seven people there killed.
Were let out. So
and Julie Lieberman goes on. They have a network that is very quick. After the Iraq War had just begun, I was going to a European-American security conference in Munich, Germany, and there were 10,000 or 15,000 protesters out on the streets. The street that our hotel was on was surrounded by police vehicles that looked like tanks. When we got there, one of the U.S. military escorts who had gone ahead said that he had the most remarkable experience earlier in the day. Somebody from the hotel had asked him to go out and meet a gentleman who was going to bring something for one of the members of the delegation. He said that it was like the Red Sea separating. This man with a black hat and beard walking through the protesters and talks. I thought to myself, who is this man? He said, what is in the bag? It was two challahs and a bottle of kosher wine. The organization is a worldwide service. I really salute Shabbat and thank them. Now, if you look online, you'll see the Shabbat Lubavitch meets with the President of the United States, Michael Chertoff. They're very, very influential in the world. And the first thing I thought about when I started hearing about this rabbi from Brooklyn who's there in India in this building and these terrorists have somehow found their way there and have held these people hostage, I'm thinking, it's the CIA.
And that's what Tom Hennigan said when you were out getting your bike and running, getting the tape. I read the Hennigan intelligence briefing, and he says the whole thing was planned from the Nariman House.
Nariman House is the...
Shabbat.
Oh, it is? Okay.
It's a local name.
The whole thing was planned from there.
Yes, and that there was already a lot of CIA, he quotes articles, Indian articles, there are all kinds of CIA surveillance equipment that the anti-terrorist Indian task force used, and the terrorists came there, and all this food was prepared for them, you know, like the guy who gave food to Lieberman, and they took over the surveillance equipment used by the anti-terrorist force, and the terrorists were on top of everything because they used that. And, of course, Tom Hennigan, maybe he's anti-Semite, I don't know, he says that Israeli Shin Bet was involved in planning this.
Well,
with the CIA.
Well, just a little bit of background again on this and some intersections with other news stories that may or may not be related. We may find out later. But on July 17th of 2008, there was a meeting in the Madison Hotel in Morris Township, New Jersey. And some 200 attorneys and jurists packed a ballroom there. And the presentations were supposed to be dealing with the nexus between civil rights law and Talmudic jurisprudence. So the topic for the second annual Jewish Law Symposium, a project of Shabbat Lubavitch of Southwest Morris County, was democracy and the uncertain fate of individual rights. And the leading off the discussion was New Jersey Supreme Court Justice Barry T. Albin, who tackled the traditional American concept of civil rights, and Rabbi Shlomo Yaffe, dean of the Institute of American Talmudic Law, giving attendees the Jewish approach to the issue. In a surprise appearance, the newly installed Chief Justice of the New Jersey Supreme Court, Stuart Rabner, shared a few words with the crowd before turning the dais over to Albin. Participants could earn New York and Pennsylvania continuing legal education credits for their attendance. The laws and ethics of the Talmud have served as a cornerstone of humanity's civil and moral infrastructure. This is all from a Shabbat site, I think. While shaping its legal systems, said Rabbi Shlomo Lubin,
founder of the Jewish Law Symposium and executive director of the sponsoring Shabbat House. This is tantamount, I suppose, to the introduction or the attempted introduction of Sharia law in Canada, where the people in Canada of the Muslim religion, some of them, are trying to impose Sharia law into our the laws of the land. And it looks like these people who are involved in the who practice the Talmud are trying to introduce or trying to get soften up people who are attorneys and lawyers and Supreme Court justices and things like that, New Jersey Supreme Court justices, getting them used to this. Then there are all the stories recently about Israelis drug trafficking and rabbis and so on being involved in the trafficking of drugs. Heroin scandal, for instance, in London's devout Jewish community. It's been shocked by a series of arrests of its members for alleged heroin smuggling.
Let's see what our guest has to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Make money.
Yeah, you got to keep all these centers in Mumbai. That can't be cheap to keep a building like that in Mumbai, would it?
Oh, no. Do you know what that property is worth there?
No.
It's worth millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions. They call it crores here. A flat in Mumbai costs over $1 million if you're in a good location. It's like Manhattan or Tokyo. It's insane.
Yeah, Robert, your American dollars go a long way there, but you've talked to me in our previous conversations, private conversations, about the anarchy around there, and wasn't just a month or two ago some guy, 12 guys raided the building next to you and killed the janitor and just ran off?
Yeah, just across the street there's a place called Evershine. It's a big complex. Yeah, there must be 500 apartments or something in it, or maybe more. I never took a real good look. But there was they have a society which manages the complex, like a condominium group. And there was a local hood, they call him Gundas here. He was in London. He ordered his boys to go in and kill the present secretary. They stabbed him 17 times. And then ran out and said, hopped in some rickshaws that were waiting for them and sped off. Well, they did catch them, the police anyway. But the whole thing was it's a mafia hit. It was a mafia hit by this guy who wanted the guy's job. And he's also lives in the same complex. And he went to London for an alibi. But hey, every day some kind of crime is going on in Mumbai. I mean, I can't understand.
How many people live there?
19 million in there.
That's that's a big city.
Yeah.
A lot of crimes can go on in a city with 19 million people in it. I mean, enough go on here, and in this general vicinity, what we've got. I mean, you have to go out a fair way to get 5 million people congregated. If you want to say there's 5 million people in Toronto, but 19 million, that's huge.
Yeah,
it's the second biggest city, right, Robert?
Mexico, I guess, city is the largest city. I don't know what Bombay is.
And look at the
Wiki says it's the second biggest area, Mumbai.
So you can see any time you get a city that gets huge like that, and the anarchy in Mexico Mexico City. There are kidnappings going on all the time. It's horrible to live there, and that's just been escalating. I met some people from Mexico. I did some business with them about 10 years ago, and it was bad then, and I think it's only got worse.
Yeah, well, it's bad here. There's three elements here: the politicians, the police, and the mafia, and all of them are all in unity. They all dance together.
Hmm.
Which one you can't? The definition is too vague between them. The politicians are being paid by the mafia, and the police are also being paid not to kill the mafia. And they have hit squads here. They're called encounter police. And an encounter means they go and shoot somebody. doesn't mean that he just meet them. They go out and shoot them. And they plant the gun and say, you know. And most of the hitmen are from the villages, the local dons, who are the head of the mafia, bring these young kids in that are 20 years old, 18 years old, give them 1,000 rupees, and tell them to, you know, to pop someone away. And it's done, every day. And there are, of course, the honor killings, too, where if a brother thinks his sister is making eyes at some boy down the street who happens to be Muslim or not Hindu or something else, they behead the girl and call it an honor killing.
That's terrible.
Hey, Robert, do they report these daily murders in the paper every day?
Yeah.
Must be a big newspaper.
Yeah, Times of India. It's a joke. I mean, it's like a National Enquirer kind of, you know.
Right, Greg, I want you to go in, and since Greg's a Stalinist, he presents himself as a Stalinist, his former co-host, or is on leave right now, I'll be back soon, maybe.
Daniel helped on today's program.
Oh, okay.
He works on the show. We work together during the week on...
What about the terrorists in the hotels? We steered away.
All right, but Robert, I wanted to say that Greg is a devout atheist, and I think he'd be interested on your commentary, which is spelled out in your book, God, Men, Con Men, on your experience with many kinds of cults and Indian religions and other religions and gurus. You have not an atheistic response to your life doing that, but I think, Greg, it would be similar to Grace. Give us your view on religion and the spiritual impulse of people, Robert.
And again, the Robert Carr's book is called God Men, Con Men, just to emphasize that. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, religion is simply the outgrowth of the desire to survive, that's all. And to create a God you can pray to help you survive in the world. You know, it has its roots in thousands of years ago when we were stumbling around in the desert or jungle or wherever it was. And we, invented all this as a political form of security. And the priests became the custodians of the law, the Torah, the holy book, the morals, the codes, the ethics. The whole structure is corrupt. It's just a form to control people, tell them what to do, and to be secure, basically. People want security. That's the main thrust of our human interest in living. So the only thing we're really interested in is sex and surviving. And we have to eat to survive, and we have to have a place to sleep.
Wait a minute. What about doing a radio show? Isn't that part of it? Sex, eating, and radio
and
show.
Communication.
Radio show's in there too. Yeah. No, but sex is for survival. But human beings have turned it into a pleasure. I mean, it is pleasurable, of course, and that's nature's invention, so they can guarantee the species. Okay. If it were boring or painful, people wouldn't do it. So it's the main drive, driving the engine inside me. So, it has become a traditional system of creating a police force to govern a society with religious laws. That's all it is. Nothing more. There's nothing about God, nothing about anything else in it. It's just rules to live by. That's all.
And
unfortunately, everything else that we have in life, all the other attributes and interests we have, are the outgrowth of the religious impulse. So everything, science is an outgrowth of the religious quest. Want to know what is the fundamental particle? What's before God? What happened before the Big Bang? What was there? Was there? All this goes on and on and on. So, people.
Well, Robert,
you
don't have an opinion on whether you survived death or not.
First of all, I don't even know if there's a person there called Robert. That,
right. Yeah.
That's all the, perhaps a ghost in the machinery, you know.
Yeah.
The guy who's talking here is just a residue of information and experiences that I've had in my life. And as far as me, Robert, an ego, I question all that very much. I question it all. But I don't think that there's any individuality there at all. There's just a record playing or a tape. We're just a tape recorder, and then I'm playing my tapes, okay? That's all that's
okay.
There, the tape.
Okay.
Huh?
Okay. Playing okay is one of our themes right. Today. Greg, is this what Robert's saying? Is that comforting right. To your atheist self?
Well, yeah, it sort of gives an excuse for why people do this, and I mean, I don't want to do it, but I understand why people need these gods and so on down through time. I don't know whether it's also an attempt to explain things to children, or and then it carries on in adult life. It's like CNN for kids and CNN International, right?
Well, basically, it's a feel good pill. That's all it is. You go to the temple, you feel good. You can go to a bar, you can do the same thing, have a couple drinks, or go to a baseball or football game. It's just an entertainment. That's all. It's just a business. Also, it's a very good business. Who else makes millions of dollars and does nothing, you know?
I know people who make money and do nothing. I wish I could get one of those jobs. I wish I could get a job where you could make money
but
and
just,
do nothing.
Just be a guru.
You know, to pretend you do things, like put papers in front of you, carry papers around with you, roll them around. You know,
well,
I just wish I could have a job where you didn't do anything.
Well, you'd be a guru. Robert just told you.
Would I be a guru? That's right. Maybe that. Yes, you're right. You're right. These people are gurus. They're trying to be gurus. Like, they don't seem to have a thought in their head. They can't put ideas together. They don't make any sense. And that makes them a guru.
That
right.
Sounds like our show, Greg.
Yeah.
Why don't you turn sounds this show familiar. Into a religion or put on a guru clothes or guru manner, guru syndrome?
And if you shoot all the gurus in the world right now, there's hundreds more waiting to be born.
Oh, do you mean you can't be serious? Do you mean to say
let's
say this happens? Let's say you do this, and then there'll be another one.
Yep, they're waiting in line. They're waiting in line. With their spiritual goods. And the people want it because the people want some pill to feel good.
Oh, this guru, the guru that the people, person that I think is trying to be a guru doesn't make me feel good at all. In fact, there's somebody that was called Dr. Feelgood, and he made me feel bad. He was a guru. He actually called himself Dr. Feelgood. And it made me feel really bad, this guy.
Yeah. Was he the guy that was giving Elvis Presley the medications?
He could have been. He's despicable, but...
Pickable,
by the way. Both pickable and despicable.
Well, when Robert talks about
religion,
sex and food...
Hold on, sorry, Bob Dobbs, what were you saying?
When Robert talks about sex and food as the instincts and basics of life, we add communication, and the new religion is the media gurus or the TV shows, the Oprah Winfreys. They're the new version.
Yeah, she's a guru.
Yeah, how about this person? This person, how about this as a guru? Hold on just a second.
If you're one of the people that's watching Channel 7, but you're not paying, consider all the wonderful enjoyment that you get from watching Channel 7. It's a little over a million people, I think, that watch Channel 7 in Washington. Is it? Oh, nine? 9 million people. A little over 9 million people that watch Channel 7 in Washington State and British Columbia, but 14% actually send in the support of 1 million to 9 million. What's the difference here? Please make a call right now and support Channel 7. You'll get the good programming that you've been able to get for such a long time. The volunteers are sitting over there looking at me and smiling and thinking that I don't know my numbers, but I do. Pick up the phone and call right now. We're waiting for you. Thank you.
Very, very clever.
I mean, there's someone who, I mean, you were sure in Mumbai, pretty sure that around 19 million people were there. She had a range between 1 and 9 million. She wasn't sure. She was so unclear of that general area that she was living in. How many people were there? It just didn't matter to her. Or she was confused. And then she was getting into 14% of whether one, of 1 million. That's a lot. But then 14% of 9 million, that's even more.
Yeah, but she got your sympathy. That's what she was after.
That's right. That's right. That's what we're all looking for here is sympathy.
So back to our terrorists. Why did they attack Mumbai?
I don't know.
Huh? Well, because it's such a big city. You can hide in there.
Four or five bomb blasts in the last 6 months here in India.
Right, because Robert, it's so big. A lot of stuff can go on. Like New York's big; it got smacked on September 11th. Mumbai, they should look at Mexico as the next terrorist place because they can do a lot of planning and no one knows they're there.
But was I mean? On the one hand, you had this this Taj Hotel, and they seem to do it with very few people. They seem to do an incredible amount of damage.
They said there were 10. Well, the fire department probably did the most damage, so. And the shooting the. Trying to shoot the terrorists. The hotel's a mess, but the group that owns the Tata family.
Is that the guy who has that was trying to build that motor vehicle plant and they had to move it? The Tata Motors is the. Yeah. They're trying to make these small cars.
Affordable cars.
Yeah.
About $2,000 for a car. One lakh, they call it. But we don't need any more car. Now the traffic is so horrendous, it takes 2 or 3 hours to traverse about a mile on the highway here at the peak hours. It's insane. And Indians, there's no rules, there's no traffic rules, so they do what they want. And it's every day there are accidents. Every day people are killed crossing the railroad tracks, hit by the commuter trains. It's insane.
Just stay home. You're going to stay home, Robert? I'm going to worry about you.
I get bored.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, don't go on the railroad tracks. I don't think that would be a good idea.
Greg, an Indian is an oral man, non-linear.
Oh.
They don't follow any linear
Indian
directions.
Indian men are oral men. Yes.
Yeah, oral men.
Oh, it's linear, very linear society. But
well, you mean linear in the religious Puritan sense,
well,
right?
The ethics, moral. Well, the moral is a joke. It's just lip service. It's one of the most corrupt social structures in the world. You can buy anything. Whatever you do, you have bribery is a way of life. Whatever it is you want, you have to bribe somebody. If you want to teach English in a school you've started, you have to bribe the officials. If you want to buy a flat, you have to bribe somebody to do the paperwork.
If you start an English school, do you have to bribe the students to come and learn?
No. The authorities.
All right. Oh, bribe the authorities. I see.
Well, whatever
if you start
you want, you have to bribe somebody. If you want a telephone, you want it today. Or you don't want to wait 6 months for it, so you want it today. You bribe them. You get it today.
What are you doing there, Robert? How long can you stand it there? When is it?
I don't know.
It's going to start to. They'll have their claws into you soon. We've got to get you out of here, out of there. We've got to raise some money, like on that fundraising drive, to get you out of Mumbai, airlift you out. We'll have to get a helicopter, have people coming down on strings, and lift you out of there, like the Thunderbirds or something. We've got to get you out of there.
Yeah, and we'll put him on the CKLN board as international community rep.
Okay.
And the other sense, India is quite charming.
Well, I guess the charming side must weigh it out. I'll tell you, Robert. Well, thank you for calling us or for accepting our call this morning, and you were coming in loudly and clearly. I must say, from Mumbai, much better than we have local calls. So they must be doing something right. All that bribery must be going to make a very, very good telephone service.
Gregory, let me just compliment this.
satellite here. It doesn't go through the local wires.
Oh, all right. No, that's good. That's good.
It's a cell phone, so.
Greg, okay, let me finish up.
Hold on. Bob Dobbs, just before you go, Robert.
Yes.
Bob, what were you going to say?
I want to make this cultural point, Robert. Is to start a cult and be a guru, do you have to bribe somebody?
More or less.
Okay. You're going to bribe the former priest, I guess. And the other thing is, Robert has told me that the Walmart and the Gap, all these things are right there in his neighborhood. He's really sort of still in California.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a mall down the street here, and when I go in, I get confused. I don't know where I am. I could be in Palm Springs. There's a hotel here called the J.W. Marriott. It looks just like the hotel in Palm Springs there. It has flamencos. It overlooks the Indian Ocean there, the Arabian Sea. It has a lagoon, and you're transported into another realm by what's happening here. The Indians are pushing food carts around loaded with goods. And it's the mall, and brands, jeans, have to be Levi's. Levi's is the hot jean, not Calvin Klein, but Levi's.
Yeah, I know someone just recently who might be on the show next week, who's from Saudi Arabia, and he's describing his life as best he can because he's just learning English, and it just sounds like the United States there.
Yeah,
they're going to Hardee's restaurant, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. If I went to Saudi Arabia, would I want to see a Hardee's there? It would seem very disorienting to me.
You can buy a hot dog in Bombay, at a mall. American hot dog. That's what it's advertised as, American hot dog.
It's pollution as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
It's American pollution spread over there, and I guess it's never going to go away. It's got its hooks in.
It's all part of the hypnosis that's going on.
I don't know what to say, Robert. I wish you luck over there. I'm going to
Bangkok next month, so... Gonna check Bangkok.
Don't go by plane.
they're having a little problem with the airport.
That airport is completely shut down. Still, it's there are 100
Chiang Mai, and also in Bangkok.
There are 100,000 people still are stranded.
Yeah.
In Bangkok because of that airport closing, and I mean that would never happen anywhere. I can imagine the police would go in there and just kill everybody.
Well, they won't do that in Thailand because it's a Buddhist country, and no one will be responsible for the first form of violence or anything.
Well, I think it's a good thing. Again, it's something where everything kind of calms down.
Yeah,
and people have to
sort it out. They'll sort it out.
That's right, in their own way, in a timely manner.
when they have
5 minutes, they'll sort it out. That's our motto around here. When I've got 5 minutes,
Robert, I'll be interviewing you in 14 hours.
14 hours, Robert. You'll be interviewed by Bob.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert, for being on the show with me.
You're
Your
welcome.
Book is Godmen, Conmen, and it sounds like an interesting book. And thank you for giving on-the-ground information in Mumbai, and I'm sure we'll be contacting you again if you wish to speak with us get further information, because I think this Mumbai story is going to be big.
It'll be interesting when they find out who's behind it all,
Yeah, well, or when the more explosions happen. Like that. And then the machine guns start again.
Oops.
Yeah, yeah. And shotgun blasts. Yeah, big explosion again. A nuclear explosion, maybe even.
No, that's what we need.
Yeah, that's off in the distance. Anyway, thanks, Robert. We'll see you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Robert Carr we had on the line from Mumbai, India. And we're
it
in the
worked,
wait.
Greg. It
we're,
worked.
Yeah. Yeah, we got it. We did it. Yep, we did it. Yep. Yeah, we did it. Listen how long that explosion is.
And we did it in a timely manner.
We did it in a timely manner. We did. Listen how long that explosion is.
We'll do it again when we get 5 minutes.
When we got 5 minutes, we'll do it again. You're right.
See, Greg, it's all a cartoon for you. I mean, that's the sound effects. And he was describing a city that's an animated cartoon, it sounds like.
Yeah, a very dangerous animated cartoon.
And the anarchy.
Yeah.
So let's take a call.
Well, 416-595-1655. I'm playing the end. Section.
Yeah, great. Did you look at Addendum Zeitgeist?
No, I did. You know, I didn't even get a chance to do that. It was just a miserable week.
Well, I did.
Did you?
I want to tell that caller. You know, what's it? Diane is her name?
I can't remember.
Anyway, she called in, wanted to. I looked at it, and I got some commentary about it if she wants to respond at some point.
I turned off the end theme. We'll just carry on until I see somebody come into the room. Will that be all right with you, Bob?
Oh, I love going over time. You know,
yeah.
I'm an on-air person. I'm addicted.
So what do you think of this? They had this Mumbai attack. They go to a huge hotel. You'd think that would be enough. You'd think that they put all their energies into that. But then they went to another hotel. Then they were doing something at a railway station. They didn't seem to talk much about that at all. I've seen photographs of someone walking in with a machine gun into a railway station.
And they're now cleaning up the bodies, and they say they're piled up dead, 300 in the hotel rooms.
I didn't see that report, but who knows? I'm sure it's possible. And then you wonder, why wouldn't the people who are these terrorists, so-called, why wouldn't they just book into the hotel with all their equipment? Could they have had people on the inside?
Yeah, and maybe there's a mind control element that they have to be – the route they took to get there is part of the MKUltra hypnosis these kids are under.
Hmm. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to talk more – I wish you had talked more about the AGM, the annual general meeting that took place on Sunday, because I was there and I found it extremely interesting to see the dynamics of the situation. First of all, I'm a passionate supporter of alternative radio.
Right.
And when I went to that meeting, I was very disturbed by what I found. About 8 years ago, WBAI in New York City had a coup d'etat. The reactionary forces in that city took over a very progressive station called WBAI, which was connected to Pacifica Radio across the U.S. That disturbed me immensely because for approximately a year and a half, we truckers and other listeners to the station were deprived of intelligent alternative radio, and it was very damaging to the progressive community. So when I went to that meeting on Sunday, and you were there and a whole bunch of other people there.
That's right.
I was disturbed by the, elusive, defensive, and the lack of transparency around the management. And I think for us, the solution for us is to continue organizing. Perhaps we should set up a support committee among students, listeners, and volunteers of CKLN to meet on a monthly basis to plan actions and to keep a sharp eye on these people there, because some of them are very arrogant, insensitive, and dictatorial. And I think we have to, when good people do nothing, evil triumphs. And I can see the beginning of evil at CKLN, and it disturbs me tremendously. So I wish perhaps we should concentrate more on building a support committee for CKLN, a man of everybody.
Well, I guess if listeners wish to do that, if they're so interested, I guess I can give them my email address.
And mine, too.
And I'll forward them along to you, all right?
Great.
I'll take the brunt. International connection at rogers.com, and I'll forward all of those along to Tom, who was kind enough to come out and show an interest in the station and in its inner workings, because it's one thing to sit out there and listen, but there are other aspects to this. A lot of the reasons that you get the programming that you receive on your radio is because of things that actually go on the ground at the station, and you are a part of it. That's why they call it community radio. It isn't just, it's community radio and you turn it on at your house. Yes, that's part of it, but there is an aspect of involvement with the station, and we have some very good people out there who are our listeners.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we should learn from our American sisters and brothers in New York City, in Berkeley, California, Washington, D.C., who organized. They organized day in, day out, picketed the station when it was being controlled by the reactionary element. in management.
I mean, it can go against you. The thing is that what you're talking about, Tom, is more involvement, and it's a numbers game. You and that was perfectly evident last week. What the numbers mean, and when you have if there are more numbers of people who think one way or another, you're going to get a different response, a different reaction, and different kind of radio. And if you just look at it like, oh, I mean, I'm surprised someone who I phoned, who I